You're listening to the 6th District Congressional Debate on 590 and 106.9 FM WKZO, streaming live on our website, WKZO.com, and also on our Facebook page. We're being joined live in the WKZO studios by incumbent Republican Congressman Fred Upton and Democratic challenger and state representative John Hoadley. And our next question, gentlemen, tackles the Affordable Care Act. What about the future of the Affordable Care Act? What is its future? What should be the future of the Affordable Care Act? Should government insurance be available to all? And Mr. Hoadley, you're first.
I think this is one of the clear distinctions and differences in this debate. And when we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, I believe that more people should have health care, not less. I believe that your health care shouldn't be tied to your employment status, because we just lived through a global health pandemic where millions of people lost their health care and their jobs through no fault of their own, and they just when they needed health care the most. And this is an area where we are the most different. You can check the congressional record. Congressman Upton voted 12 times to remove coverage for pre-existing conditions. I think that should be covered. Congressman Upton voted over 60 times to weaken health care. I think that we should expand health care. Congressman Upton voted no on H.R. 3 that would have lowered the cost of prescription drugs. And frankly, I think that we should make sure that our medications and our prescriptions are affordable for everyone. Healthcare is on the line, and there is a clear difference in this debate between my position and Congressman Upton's.
Mr. Upton, your response.
You know, there's no question that the healthcare system is broken, needs to be improved. That was true before the Affordable Care Act, and it's true now. I don't believe in taking benefits away from people who already have them, which is why I supported keeping Medicaid expansion, which has helped hundreds of thousands of Michiganders get affordable health care. I'm a co-sponsor of H.R. 692, which would outlaw any change to current protections on pre-existing conditions, regardless of the fate of the rest of the Affordable Care Act. I was also one of 8 Republicans more than a year ago, to vote for a resolution condemning the president's lawsuit against the ACA. John Hoadley supports Medicare for all. Joe Biden says that'll cost us $30 trillion. Where are we going to get that? It's going to close rural hospitals, and it's going to remove employer-sponsored health insurance. That's not the answer. We need to work together to make sure that we can find a health care system that works, and clearly that's not been the case up to this point.
And Mr. Hoadley, a rebuttal.
Let me be clear. What Congressman Upton is doing is saying that the insurance company should have more power over your health care and your treatment than you and your doctor. The people I talk to can't wait. Their medications cost thousands of dollars a month, and we've seen no relief. And, you know, votes don't lie. Talking about what we could potentially do now doesn't replace the fact that when given the chance, Congressman Upton voted to take away our health care. And that's why we need to desperately see change. Over 7 million people are going to have a new pre-existing condition after COVID-19. Let's cover them too.
Our next question here was actually a question that was asked from a lot of our Facebook listeners regarding term limits. This one comes from Ron Hamm. He asks, do you or do you not support term limits? And if you do, how long should they be? Mr. Upton, you will go first.
Well, a couple things. The founders of the Constitution, the authors of the Constitution, debated term limits and chose not to have them. Michigan voters back in the 90s thought that they were a good idea, which is why we have them for the governor and state legislators. But the courts ruled correctly that they did not apply to the Congress. So the only way you could have them apply to the Congress is if you actually pass a constitutional amendment. I actually supported a constitutional amendment to do that back in the 90s. It did not get the two-thirds vote. Senate never took it up. It never happened. It's not likely to. It's pretty hard to pass a constitutional amendment. So that's really not in the cards to happen. I believe that the voters have the right, and they certainly do, to make their choices, and we make sure that all voters are educated and are able to take that opportunity to go to the polls.
Thank you so much. Mr. Hoadley, your response.
So we've seen term limits in the state of Michigan, and you know, I think we've learned a lot from that conversation. When we have a functioning democracy where we have non-gerrymandered districts where people can vote, where we decrease the influence of money in politics, then people, not special interests, would have the best say. At the same time, I think with conversations happening around should there be Supreme Court term limits, what would be an appropriate set of term limits for members of Congress or the Senate, I think it's a conversation worth exploring. But here's what I also know, that right now the current system in Lansing oftentimes gives too much power to lobbyists instead of we the people. So if we're going to do this, let's get it right. So Ron, I'm really open to if you have ideas on what the right term limits would be, what those numbers should look like. But at the same time, I want to make sure that we are learning from lessons of the past and building a system that makes sure that voters' voices are heard the loudest.
Mr. Upton, your chance for a rebuttal.
Well, as you look at the term limits in Lansing, I think they are too short. The voters approved them, so that's the way it is. But 6 years is pretty short for a state rep, and John's nodding. I think he might agree. Not sure he'd be a candidate today if he could run another 2 years. I don't know. I won't make that. He doesn't get the rebuttal time. But I think it might be better if it was 12 years. If he actually have them, it would be 12 years rather than six or eight. Seems like it's awfully short a time for people to actually understand the legislative process, to build the relationships, and to be able to get things done representing hundreds of thousands of people.
Thank you both. And for our next question, we're going to kind of double back into the healthcare area to address specifically the topic of pre-existing conditions. Should an insurance company have the choice to cover somebody based on pre-existing conditions? Mr. Hoadley, you go first.
The answer is no, right? We need a healthcare system that covers everybody. And we all bring ourselves to this conversation. You know, if we remember before the Affordable Care Act, we saw insurance companies that once the bill came due would try to go back in time to see if they could find any way to weasel out of paying what the bill that they owed. You know, my partner Chris has multiple sclerosis. That means that he's got a pre-existing condition for the rest of his life. I got folks across the district who have sent me messages about hemophilia, about diabetes, about cancers that they had as children or cancers of that their children have had, that they worry if we lost coverage for pre-existing conditions, they would never be able to get vital health care for the rest of their lives. Over a third of us have pre-existing conditions. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of us right here in Southwest Michigan. This is what I'm talking about and saying that we shouldn't be giving away our power to health insurance companies. We need to reclaim our power and make sure that we and our doctors actually get to decide our course of treatments.
Mr. Upton, your response.
Well, I want to remind you that I'm a co-sponsor of legislation that's going to outlaw any change to the current protections in pre-existing illnesses. You know, it was my amendment on the House floor a number of years ago that, in fact, required that states include that as part of an essential health benefit that they must provide to all of their residents across their states. We all know people with pre-existing illnesses. Every family, I would imagine, as mine does, has pre-existing illnesses. We want to make sure that they're covered. And if the Affordable Care Act is struck by the Supreme Court as unconstitutional, we in the Congress need to come back, work together, and include a number of basic elements that would continue to protect those with pre-existing illnesses. It's something that both Republicans and Democrats support, along with making sure that children, I shouldn't say young adults, up to the age of 26 are covered. People can purchase health insurance across state lines and be able to pool, if they're in a small business, with others to create a better risk pool as it relates to the premiums that they might pay.
Mr. Hoadley, your opportunity for a rebuttal.
The story that's being told now is not reflective of the reality that we have seen. When given the choice to protect pre-existing conditions or not, Congressman Upton said he did not want to cover pre-existing conditions, and he voted to gut them 12 times. That's a historical fact. And the Upton amendment that Congressman Upton's referencing now turned out after the fact to be dramatically underfunded. It would have been about $160 billion short of getting anywhere close to the coverage and funding level it would need to make a difference. That's why we can't take a chance. With healthcare on the ballot, we need to make sure we're electing people who will fight for healthcare.
Thank you both. Our next question, what is your opinion on the idea of the federal decriminalization of marijuana? Mr. Upton, you will go first.
Well, I've, you know, Michigan voters made a decision a number of years ago not only to allow for medicinal use of marijuana, but also recreational use as well. I support states' rights. I will support that. And it's likely that we could have a vote a little bit later this year that it would disallow the Department of Justice to weigh in on those states where our voters have made a decision. And I will vote as the Michigan voters did on both those. We've also had issues involving particularly with banks that have been Justice Department and others might be going after banks for loans that they might make to agriculture folks that are growing marijuana. Again, we've made the decision in Michigan as voters, and those laws need to be upheld.
Mr. Hoadley, your response.
I support the decriminalization of marijuana. I support the legalization of marijuana. You know, this is an example of where we're seeing laws that oftentimes have created disastrous effects, oftentimes disproportionately based on your race. You know, we saw drug laws for so many years disproportionately enforced against communities of color. And as a result, we then saw an unequal level of justice. You know, I think that we should be passing laws of the things that we are actually scared of, the behavior that we want to change. And, you know, this is an example where, unfortunately, for too long, we've demonized instead of smartly regulate and safely control a substance. I support making sure that we protect the ability to have secure banking. I support the ability to make sure that we treat agricultural businesses like marijuana growers in the same way. And, you know, I think it's time that we move past this conversation on whether or not we should have marijuana decriminalized or legalized, and frankly, go back to the things then that really are going to help us move forward as a country.
Mr. Upton, your chance for a rebuttal.
Well, again, I just want to reiterate that Michigan voters made a decision, and I know that as we talk to my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, I think that there is a majority of us that would support that view as it impacts federal legislation that might otherwise undermine what we have here in Michigan. So it was fairly overwhelming in both those votes, whether it's taking care of, particularly on the medicinal marijuana, particularly with veterans and others, where in fact that is been viewed as a positive treatment, there's no way that it should be taken away.
All right, thank you very much. Our next question was just sent in to us by someone who is listening to the debate this morning, and we appreciate all of you who have taken time to listen to this debate among these candidates this morning. This question, how long do you plan to address the Black Lives Matter beyond the viewpoint of police brutality and criminal justice, healthcare, black unemployment rate, housing discrimination, etc.? These issues, how do you address these? And we start with Mr. Hoadley.
Well, thank you. And I think it's a powerful question. I mean, I think we should say very clearly, Black Lives Matter. And we should have we are having a conversation right now in our country on racial justice. We see racial disparities that exist overwhelmingly in the criminal justice system, in our healthcare system, which is why I'm so proud that Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist and Governor Whitmer are leading the Racial Disparities Task Force related to COVID-19 and broader health disparities. I support that effort. We see it in economics, where so many of the loans that came through the PPP program were actually more likely to be determined by your relationship with a bank than with the validity of your business. And unfortunately, for so long, we saw many entrepreneurs of color not have access to those types of programs. We need to continue this conversation. And, you know, I think I've been proud as a legislator to support efforts that are trying to make us that more perfect union that we are all striving for. Let's lift up the voices of black and brown voters. Let's make sure everybody, regardless of your race, has a seat at the table.
Mr. Upton, your response.
Racism is real, and it's real unfortunate. And we all need to speak out against it, as I have every single year. Black lives do matter. Yes, they do. And John Lewis, there was a special on him last night on CNN, was a terrific special. He was a very good friend of mine. John Lewis asked me to go join with him in march in Selma across the Edmund Pettus Bridge a number of years ago. I didn't go once. I didn't go twice. I went multiple times with him to speak out against racism and to have my voice added with his. A number of years ago, we had issues in Benton Harbor, St. Joe. I asked John Lewis to come back and calm the waters. He did. He did a wonderful job and was really a true friend. So where do we go from now, from here? Well, we need better training, and we need to have additional resources for our police. We need to ban chokeholds and have a national registry of those officers that might have violated the standards that are there. We need more resources, not less. But bottom line, black lives do matter, and it's a wake-up call for all of us.
And Mr. Hoadley, a response?
You know, actually, I think this is an area where Congressman Upton and I agree on many of these issues. I was proud in the recent budget to vote for more resources for law enforcement officers so they could get the mental health counseling and support that they need. I also believe that we should be having the national conversation, national registry, banning some of the chokeholds and some of the procedures that have actually helped inflame as opposed to keep our communities safe. And then last but not least, remember, it's not just the words we say, but the votes we take. You know, and so that's, I think, as we move forward, let's make sure that we have policy that also then aligns with the values of the Black Lives Matter movement. So we're actually keeping everybody safe and treating folks equally.
Looking at the time, our next question will probably be our final question, and then we'll go into our two-minute closing statements. This question, how do you feel the current administration's immigration policy has affected Southwest Michigan? And we begin with Mr. Upton.
The immigration system is broken. It needs to be fixed. The president was right when he said a few years ago, Congress, do your job. And I've tried to do that. I've been on a task force with the Problem Solvers Caucus. We passed legislation that passed the House last December by nearly 100 votes, helping our ag workers, bringing status to folks. Need to help our dreamers. Many of them came at age 2 or 3. They're here 15, 18, 20 years later. They've got an education here. They're raising their families here. They have jobs here. They pay taxes here. You might remember a case of an individual, a doctor here in Kalamazoo. He came from Poland, and he was arrested, detained by ICE because he had some violations like too close to parking to a hydrant, no seat belt, a couple of speeding tickets. We helped get him out. In fact, I reached out to Governor Snyder, who gave him a pardon later so that that couldn't be held again. But the bottom line is we need to work together. It's broken, and we've started to do that, particularly with our Problem Solvers Caucus.
Mr. Hoadley, your response.
The immigration system is broken. Congressman Upton said 34 years to fix it. And I think, though, the reality here is that we need to make sure that we're getting back to something that lets us be the beacon of light to the world. Let's make sure that there is a clear system so we can support our agricultural workers and their families and make sure that they are doing work and being protected while they're here. I support the dreamers. I've actually had legislative interns who are dreamers. I believe that we need to make sure that there is a clear path for citizenship for folks who want to follow the rules. The fact that we have so many of our asylum seekers who are still in trouble, whether it's folks like Ibrahim or Auntie Sahida, we have so many folks in our backyard who are struggling under the burdens of a broken system. We have immigration courts that are insufficient to the task. But here's what I know, that if we come together, if we can work together, we actually can make a system that works for all of our friends and all of our neighbors. And that provides some predictability and security for our country, and I'm ready to get to work to do that.
Mr. Upton, your chance for a rebuttal.
Well, the bottom line is, for those that are opposed to immigration reform, we have more than 10 million folks that are here. So let's figure out a way so that they can stay here, so that they're legal, they continue to pay taxes, and they continue to be strong partners in all of our communities as part of our workforce. We can do that, and we should do that, and we should do it on a bipartisan basis, which is why I'm proud to be part of the Problem Solvers Caucus, where we've actually taken some concrete steps to do that.
Thank you so much to both of you. We will now wrap up with two-minute closing statements for each candidate. Mr. Upton went first with the opening statements, so now, Mr. Hoadley, you will start.
Well, thank you. Thank you to everybody who's been listening today. You know, the choice of our district could not be more clear. Congressman Upton has had 34 years to address the challenges facing our district, our state, our communities, and he hasn't. While talking about civility or bipartisanship, he's taken some of the most partisan and extreme votes that have hurt our families. At the end of 34 years, Mr. Upton's signature achievement is a bill that robbed the Prevention and Public Health Fund of $3.5 billion, money that could have prevented the COVID-19 disaster that we're continuing to live through now. Mr. Upton's plan for health care is to let the insurance companies have more power over our treatment than our doctors. Mr. Upton's plan for the environment is to trust the corporate polluters who have failed to address the climate crisis and dumped toxic contamination into our groundwater. Mr. Upton has failed to stand up for us whenever those that have been bankrolling his campaign have told him to be quiet. And unfortunately, Mr. Upton's campaign and secret money allies are resorting to lying about my record instead of running on his own merits. It's exactly the swamp-style politics that voters said they wanted to see changed. Fred Upton has changed, and that's why we need to change who represents us. You know, I need your vote. If you want to expand health care and lower prescription drug prices, then I need your vote. If you want cleaner air and cleaner water, then I need your vote. I need your votes because at the end of the day, the problems that our communities are facing are the result of politics as usual, and we can change that. I'm going to work for Southwest Michigan, not special interests, and make sure that our voices are at the center of decision-making in Washington. So I hope to earn your vote. To learn more about me, my story, my values, please visit johnhoadley.com. And most importantly, your vote is your voice. So let's make sure that we have all of our voices calling for change at the ballot box on or before November 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Upton, your closing remarks.
You know, all my career, I put policy over politics, bipartisanship over partisan attacks. 2 years ago, Joe Biden called me one of the finest guys to ever work with, and he, of course, was referring to the inclusion of the Bo Biden billion-dollar cancer moonshot initiative that we included as part of 21st Century Cures, a law which will speed up the approvals of drugs and devices and really help patients and provide quality jobs at companies locally like Pfizer and Stryker. I worked with Republicans and Democrats to clean up PFAS and insist on money for the Great Lakes. I was a leader in the Congress to combat racism and provide more resources, not less, for law enforcement. John Hoadley voted earlier this summer to encourage communities to defund the police. That's not the answer, which is why I'm supported by the Police Officers Association of Michigan. We need to help our small businesses and their employees, more money for PPP and liability relief. John Hoadley voted just last week to allow frivolous lawsuits for small businesses. You know, over the years, I've voted to expand Medicare and Medicaid, provide prescription drug benefits for Medicare beneficiaries. It was my work to expand I-94 without raising gas taxes. John Hoadley supported the governor's request for a 45-cent gas tax, with little of the money coming here to Michigan. You know, I view myself as a problem solver, willing to work with anybody, any president, to get the job done. Thanks, WKZO.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes our 6th District Congressional Debate on 590 and 106.9 FM WKZO. Our sincere thanks to Congressman Fred Upton and State Representative John Hoadley for being with us to share their views with you today. A reminder, the full one-hour debate will be available to listen to on our website at WKZO.com under the podcast section later today. Again, thanks so much for listening on 590 and 106.9 FM WKZO.